Tuesday, July 29th. It is the Deferred Collusion Trade Deadline Special. We're here, Brandon. This is where champions are made in the 2025 season, and we're here to talk all about it. It's Deferred Collusion's me, Jesse Rowe, King of Crespi, joined by Lord Paramount of Los Angeles, California, Brandon Bollinger. Brando, what's up, baby? How are you?
Jesse, my Bessie, what's up, boo? It's good to see you. It's even better to be talking baseball.
I thought you were rhyming for a second. I thought you were
doing that.
Poetry, beat poetry.
I'm a street poet.
Yeah, you are.
I really speak to the streets of LA from mi corazón. That's my heart in Spanish. Jess, you know I'm always trying to help my polyglots out here.
Yeah.
It's so good to be back. Little bit of wind in my sails. Shohei, 5 consecutive homers. The Dodgers, you know, salvage a series against the Twins. Now we, took the first game of the series against the Reds, and things feel like we might be riding the ship, right? You know,
well,
Glasnow's coming back, Snell's coming back, and trade rumors are running rampant, Big Daddy.
I feel like you have a little spot in your memory. I like your positivity, but you're just leaving out, like, did you black out over the weekend when the Dodgers lost 2-3 to the Red Sox at Fenway? Maybe you did.
Why would you bring that up?
Totally blacked out when that happened.
It would have been cool if we just didn't talk about that.
Yeah.
It was cool to see Walker Buehler get his World Series ring.
That was pretty cool.
To see Michael Conforto play left field.
It wasn't. And unfortunately, I think we have to talk about it because it's the first thing in our notes today. So we'll start with the bad stuff and then we'll get to the good stuff. How about that? We'll end this on a positive note.
Only if you promise to go ahead and like, comment, subscribe. Go ahead and tell your friends.
Yeah.
Co-workers, people you drive by in the street. Deferred Collusion. We are out here reporting on the mysterious things, aren't we, Jess?
Let us know if you want a bumper sticker. We'll put it on. We can put it on your car.
We're big Cartnark guys. Shouts out Cartnarks.
I do love I am a huge fan of Cartnarks.
I love that. Yeah. But we did just release a little video. Jesse has a very interesting theory about Shohei Ohtani's. We're calling it the Winter Soldier surgery. Apparently Spencer Strider also had a comparable surgery, Jess.
Yeah, but he's not throwing as hard as he used to.
No.
But I did see some good points because I was making the point that nobody has 2 Tommy Johns and throws harder after the second one. Like, yes, after the first one, it happens a lot. Guys throw harder than before. Buehler is a famous case, Strider, but not after 2. But somebody did make the point that Jacob deGrom is throwing 100 miles an hour this year after his second Tommy John. So I stand corrected. You know, that's that. That's fine. But, you know, who knows? Maybe he also got the Winter Soldier surgery. And this is like a new thing that pitchers are doing because it's hard to get a lot of information on exactly what it is that Shohei got. So.
Yeah, I'm convinced that he was given not cadaver like parts, but actually ligaments from former Japanese pro baseball pitchers. I think he's got a little Nomo in there. There, whoever, I'm getting.
Oh, they're harvesting some dead bodies in Japan.
Yeah, that's where's Yu Darvish been, dude? Answer, riddle me this, Jess.
He drank some adrenochrome,
dude.
All right, so. Let's just start off with Boston series really quick because it started off pretty good. Dodgers got the win, and then. They played some pretty bad baseball. I mean, look, we got baseball a little bit in that series. That stadium, it's a beautiful stadium. That stadium sucks. That stadium, like, you hit, you know, they love to talk shit about the short porch and right field at Yankee Stadium. I mean, there were like 3 or 4 hits that the Red Sox had that were just like little just like fly balls that hit the wall that turned into extra base hits. And you know, I know that Michael Conforto had a pretty good game in the final game, but I made a video about how I think it's just time to let this go, and to make a move here at the deadline to get an outfielder to improve the defense. I'm actually retracting a previous statement that I made about how I didn't want the Dodgers to give up a lot in the potential Stephen Kwan Emmanuel Class A trade, which we will talk about. But I do think that going after Kwan makes a lot of sense at this point. Conforto's defense is just so god-awful in left field, and it's affecting the way that we can actually construct a roster in terms of a good defensive team, a good fundamental team, because he dropped a fly ball in Boston, misplayed a ball off the monster that led to a run. Yesterday, Yamamoto's on the mound in Cincinnati. He misplays an easy kind of like a little liner towards him that he should have caught, misplayed it, leads to the only run that Yamamoto gave up yesterday. And it's just, I don't care if his offense is coming around. This team needs to get better defensively because the offense isn't really the problem. The pitching isn't really the problem. The problem all year long really has been the fundamental baseball of this team. And part of the reason for that is everybody's playing positions that they're not used to playing. Like Conforto is not a professional outfielder anymore. Teoscar Hernandez should not be in right field. You have Haesung Kim and Tommy Edmonds switching, mixing and matching when they're going to play outfield, when they're going to play second base. You have Miguel Rojas playing third out of necessity. You have an injured Freddie Freeman. You have Mookie Betts, who's a right fielder or a second baseman, playing shortstop for the first time in his career. It's just a total mess. You have Will Smith and Dalton Rushing switching every other day. So I just think there needs to be some more consistency if you're going to do all that. And I think that Conforto is clearly the weak link here, and it just needs to end. And I think that these past few games have been just clearly enough. The bat means nothing. It's really just this needs to be a better fundamental baseball team, because the defense as it stands, I do not believe is good enough to win a World Series. I just don't. Flat out reject the idea that this team could win a World Series with the defense as currently constructed.
I honestly, brother, I just sat back and just let you preach. That was sick. Yeah. I mean, that must have been what it was like to hear Jimi Hendrix do, you know, the national anthem or whatever.
That's what I've been told.
1960s yeah. Woodstock. Mm-hmm. I'm on acid. I'm flying. There is one thing that I do disagree with, and that it's the only caveat, so I'll get it out of the way. I do think that the Dalton Rushing, Will Smith platooning has been a resounding success.
Yeah, I agree with that. Smith's, I guess what I'm saying is like incredible. You have so many different moves happening that like you need to have some consistency on the defensive end. I'm glad that one is working. You know,
totally.
Great. Yeah.
Great point.
You're right.
We've talked about this before. I think it's time that Mookie goes back to right field. To his credit, he did better at short than anybody expected. But I do feel like now with the loss of like his stepfather, tragically, all due respect to that family, and just everything else that's been going on with Mook, making this position, getting sick early in the year, losing 20 pounds, I think it's time to go back to something that's a little more second nature.
I think
so that
yes.
Everything else can start falling into place. Jess,
it's affected his offense. I think you'd agree. Like,
I totally do.
Yeah.
I think that if he doesn't get sick and he just has a regular half season and he does great and the offense is still around par, you know, normal for him, I think you leave him at short and just go, hey, this is what we do. But with Teo's struggles in right specifically, I think he's at a negative like 8. I forget what it was on MLB.com.
Teoscar Hernandez has a negative 8 fielding run value in right field.
Can't have that.
You know, right field is probably the most, other than center, left field is the easiest position in the outfield, right? That's historically what it is. It's like the first base of the outfield, and
at least in Dodger Stadium.
Yeah. And so it's just clearly Teoscar is a left fielder.
Totally. Right fielder and he's been battling injury all year, so I don't want to beat him up too much. I think everyone will agree. You just want him ready for September, October. But if that means putting him back in a position he's more comfortable with, it's about time. If that means maybe we get a little bit more production at the bat, with the bat, forgive me.
Yeah.
All that to say, I completely agree. I think it's time. You know, I know Kim just went down with a shoulder injury. He's had some really high strikeout games. I think he had 4 Ks against Boston, on Saturday, very unlike him. So we're hoping a few days off and a little rehab will do him well. But I think it's time to give him a full shake at short. I think it's time to put Gold Glove winner Tommy Edman back at second base full time. Pajes has been great in center field. And, you know, that goes back to the discussion of the trade for Kwan. Are we really expecting Kwan to come take over in left field, and then we have this albatross that is Teo's glove in right, and expect to make a deep playoff run? I don't see it. I know we were getting beat up in the comments a little bit, Jess, about the Clase Kwan trade. I know we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but I was just saying before the Boston series, I don't know that the Dodgers were just a couple of defensive runs saved in an upgrade from Kwan to Conforto to winning a World Series. I do think they are like getting fucking Teo out of right field is it's so important to that outfield's health. Yeah. And you know, since we're talking about health, obviously Mookie's offense is tied right into that. We've got him now in the leadoff spot, bumping Shohei, which I think is the right call, but it's only the right call if your leadoff hitter is, you know, well over a 700 OPS, which Mookie is not. So I don't know, Jess, for me, it's tough to really get down on this team because health has just been in flux all year. So I don't know what the actual like lineup is. Like what is our outfield? What is our infield? Is it going to have to be a platoon type thing all the way through October? Or do you think there is some moves that could happen that would shore everything up in a tidy fashion, I guess?
Okay, well, let's look at it this way. Does it need to be on the pitching end or does it need to be on the hitting end? I think defense and bullpen are probably the most key factors here. We did just get Blake Treinen back. He pitched yesterday for the first time in a while. His stuff looked good. He did struggle a little bit. He struggled with command.
Gave up
definitely
a run,
was
right?
just a little rusty, but overall the stuff looked like Blake Treinen. I thought he looked great.
Yeah.
Yamamoto threw a spun a gem in Cincinnati. He looked awesome.
Jesse, can I just add one note about Yamamoto? I believe he threw seven different pitches in that outing, which is crazy. And that screwball he had working both directions. What is happening, dude?
He also, I think, had the most swings and misses of any start in his career so far. Yes. I might be wrong on that, but he had like 22 swings and misses.
Yeah, some crazy amount of whiffs. Yeah,
he was great. And again, the only run that he gave up was because of a misplayed flare to Michael Conforto in left field, which, you know, so from the pitching.
Maybe he just needs some glasses, dude. Look what it did for Muncy.
Yeah, get some glasses for Conforto.
We got to get that guy some fucking glasses.
Yeah. Blake Snell is making he's making his return in Tampa Bay this weekend, it looks like.
Yeah.
So you have Tyler Glasnow, who's back. He looks awesome. He had like 7 innings, 12 strikeouts in his last game. He was totally dominant. You have Roki Sasaki is supposed to come back end of August, it looks like. Shohei Ohtani has looked fantastic. They're stretching him out. I know he's only at 3 innings right now, but you'd have to assume he's going to be at 5 innings probably in the next month after like maybe like 3 or 4 more starts, you'd imagine.
So, do you think that they're going to try and get Shohei to be a full-blown starter this season?
Well, it seems like they are extending his pitch count every time he's out there. If they're not, that's fine. But then that changes the calculus a little bit because then they might have to go after a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that Shohei is a 5-inning guy by the end of September, then I don't think that cup becomes as important. But I do think trading for relief help becomes extremely important because we still don't know what's going on with Gratterall. We don't have, you know, we're not going to have Michael Kopech. Do we have an update on Gratterall?
I believe Gratterall is expected to return early September.
Okay.
I believe that his timetable is that's what his timetable originally was, and he's still on that.
So I just, you know, Ben Kasparias has taken a step back lately. He has not. He's,
Jack Dreyer as well.
Jack Dreyer. And I just don't know if you can rely on those guys for high leverage moments. Blake Treinen, we know what he is. So I do think I did see a report that Pete Fairbanks was somebody of interest to the Dodgers. The Dodgers have expressed some interest in him. So I do think that would be a good move, especially because it seems like the Emmanuel Classe thing is not going to happen, which we're going to get to again. But I still think that the price tag would have been cheaper for Fairbanks anyway for similar results.
And to be honest with you, it feels like another more Friedman move than to go after Classe in the blockbuster. Again, not that he's available. But again, another guy that he's familiar with. Dodger fans might remember Pete Fairbanks in the 2020 World Series. But yeah, another Friedman guy. I think I don't know if Friedman signed Fairbanks, actually. I thought he did to the Rays.
He might have drafted Fairbanks. I'd have to look that up. But he was definitely on the Rays. No, I think it was just after his time, now that I'm thinking about it a little bit more. But regardless of that, I think Fairbanks would be a good move. But if we're looking at, like, offense, Muncy, the great news is that Max Muncy is starting a rehab assignment. Yeah. His timeline has been way faster than any of us expected it to be. So, and they also just called up Alex Freeland, who's making his major league debut today. The Dodgers.
So stoked about this kid, dude.
Yeah. Top prospect. They're putting, unfortunately, Haesung Kim is going on the IL with shoulder issues. So Freeland is going to get some run here. I don't think that the bats are going to be the problem here. It's defense and it's bullpen. And that's where I would focus this. Now, does that mean that the Dodgers would, that the only move out there is Stephen Kwan? I know that you just said that you feel like it kind of doesn't make sense if you're moving Teo back to left field. But now that we have this report about Emmanuel Classe, the closer for the Guardians, who apparently is now caught up in a gambling probe by Major League Baseball. He has basically been put on administrative leave for the foreseeable future until the end of August, at least, along with Luis Ortiz on the Cleveland Guardians. Sorry, did I say Indians? On the Cleveland Guardians. That he is essentially under investigation for potentially betting on games.
Yeah,
and
man.
There was a video that's been kind of circulating of him missing first pitches of at bats by pretty significant margins, apparently, in terms of the stat called uncompetitive pitches. Something like 17% of his first pitches have been uncompetitive, where the rest of his pitches is only like 5%. So there is some funny business going on where potentially, allegedly, there might have been some bets being made on him throwing first pitch for ball one.
Yeah, and I believe this was the same system that caught up his teammate earlier in the year. So it is a little bit damning.
Yeah.
But Jesse, is this just another nail in the gambling coffin of sports? I mean, I really feel, and I don't know Classe. I've never broken bread with him. But after seeing him get lit up a little bit in last year's postseason and the way he took to social media to show his rings and his accolades throughout his pitching career, it really seemed like a guy who was mentally breaking down. Right, who was really needing to get the public to believe in him again. He was struggling to find self-worth. Hey, man, I can relate to that completely. I'm a human being. I'm a bitch. I'm weak. And that is all things that are in me. Not saying that about Classe, but it was just something I kind of recognized, right? Only saying that, right? He's a pro. I'm a guy. However, that being said, I feel like these hyper-competitive guys, we've watched it with Jordan, right? He's out behind the fucking, you know, or in the bowels of the stadium, gambling, shooting dice with security guards, taking their money because it's about the win for them. So my point is that I could see a pro athlete who's hyper-fixated on winning, like Classe, getting a little extra juice off of winning bets. And what better way to win a bet than something you directly control the outcome of?
Yeah.
Jeff, am I off base on this or what?
No, sure. I mean, I don't know what's inside of Classe's head, but when you watch the video of some of these pitches and you see how wildly inaccurate they
damning,
are.
It's damning, right?
Yeah, it looks like he's trying to miss.
They're spiked, some of them like almost to the grass, some of them are pulled, and it's I invite everybody watching this video or listening to the audio to pull up some of these pitches in question and look at Class A's body language. To me, that is what's most damning, is that he's looking away and it's kind of seeming a little overtly cavalier, if you will. You know, right. It just seems like somebody who's playing off something like, all right, they bought it. Let's get back to work, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and again, that's not enough to convict. But if there is an investigation and they find evidence of like text messages, or like a group chat of some kind, or somebody that's making the bets on these, somebody that they know making specific bets that, oh, first pitch will be a ball, things like that.
Yeah, man.
There's always a paper trail with this stuff. So they're going to look into every relative, everybody in their inner circle, people around them that are potentially tied to Class A, tied to Ortiz. And if they're making those sorts of bets on some sort of DraftKings or FanDuel account, then it's going to look pretty bad. Now, this is, I think, something that we're seeing more and more. I mean, this just happened with Michael Porter Jr.'s brother in the NBA. He was only playing like 2 minutes a game, and he was making bets on basketball. He's been suspended for forever, for the rest of his career.
Jesse, what
is what happens when you welcome in? And I know that this is kind of a lazy argument, but I do think that this is a door that you open when you start cozying up to betting sites, because who has more control over prop bets? I'm not talking about who wins or who loses. I'm not talking about throwing games. I'm talking about prop bets, specific things. Nobody has more control over those little things, over those little stats, than the players do themselves. So when you make these prop bets so easy to do, when you make them like profitable from the betting odds standpoint and accessible, you're opening the door to this. And Major League Baseball can act all they want about being angry about this. And Class A should be suspended if he did this. It's no question about it. It's against the rules. But just like the steroid issue where they turned a blind eye until they decided it was no longer in their best interest to turn a blind eye.
Yeah.
They are culpable too in this.
Totally.
So
and they have to be. I mean, how many gambling, ads do you hear whenever you're watching anything sports related? There's always a bet. And how social is it now, right? You see people like, dude, y'all should have made this bet. Look, oh, I almost hit this parlay. Oh, whatever. There's this like, I don't know, gambler's fallacy to it, where it's very romantic and it's fun and like,
yeah, do you, again, I mean, every day, like BR betting, like Bleacher Report betting, they post like this, this guy was one win away from winning $300,000, turning $10 into $300,000,
yeah, it's, you like, see it all the time.
He pulled out too early, like that sort of thing. And like, that's what she said. So either way, that's going to be a nail in the coffin of the Emmanuel Class A trade.
Jesse, what it will be, the end of Class A's time in Cleveland. I mean, this is...
It could be baseball, Brandon. Like, rule out the possibility that this is the end of Emmanuel Class A's career, if they can prove it. Yeah.
Him being traded was the end of his time in Cleveland, and he was going to fetch a huge price. An organization as smart as Cleveland and as frugal, they were going to maximize the value out of Class A, and that wasn't going to be in another season. We all saw the writing on the wall with last postseason. There's a shelf life to closers, and especially elite ones. As a Dodger fan, we've all, watched Kenley Jensen. We watched him become this ultra elite guy through 2015 and what he did against, the Nationals, and then 2016, it really felt like, oh, this is going to be our year. And then, we got buzzsawed by the Cubs, and then 17, he's our guy. Oh, he's given up home runs in the game 2 of the World Series, and whatever. My point is, it's this thing where closers are the heavyweight boxers of their time, right? They're Tyson until they're not, right?
Until they're punch drunk. Yeah.
Exactly. Because any 7-9 hole hitter is going to be Buster Douglas launching one out in the 7th, 8th, 9th inning. And it's like, you know, it's a story we just see repeated year in, year out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole shit on Kershaw. It's like, oh, you're so good. Well, why aren't you so good in October? It's like, guy's been pretty good, but the stats and the wins don't line it up. But the bigger story, you know, the whole story is a little bit bigger, yeah. I would say. Anyways. Well,
no, I agree. And this definitely puts an end on the Classe to the Dodgers talk, because obviously we talked about it on last episode that Classe and Stephen Kwan were a potential package deal going to the Dodgers, that was a reported trade that the Dodgers were interested in. Now that Classe is off the table, maybe Fairbanks makes sense. But in terms of Stephen Kwan, are you still interested in making this move now that it would be a cheaper price, most likely? And if not, what moves would you want to see the Dodgers make coming up 48 hours from now at the deadline? What is the move that you think they need to make most?
Wow. Regarding Kwan, I think that it would be an immediate upgrade to our lineup and our defense. However, I just don't see the space for him. There is no way Mookie's going to play center. I don't think they're going to keep him at short. But depending on Kim's injury, if he can't be counted on, or if the Dodgers just don't feel like they've seen enough to keep Kim in a regular middle infielder position for the latter half of the season and into the postseason, Kwan makes sense, right? But here's the thing. I don't think that Michael Conforto is being traded. I don't think he can. He's on a one-year, $70 million contract.
Unless you eat the money. You have to eat the money.
And Jesse, I will give Conforto his due. Over the last month, he's batted around 280. So that's a pretty good sample size. But he is still among qualified hitters in baseball in 2025, the worst qualified batting average.
Yeah, and I don't care about the offense, as I said. Like, that's not important to me right now. It really is just, like, we need to have a better outfield defense, because I don't care how good the offense is. I'm very concerned that the defense just isn't good enough to win games in October.
Absolutely.
We saw that, how it cost the Yankees games against the Dodgers, and it just – I just think that that's where defense rears its ugly head the most. And
yes.
I just don't see Michael Conforto being a starting left fielder on a World Series winning team.
I could not agree more.
Yeah.
And I feel as strongly as you feel about that as I do, as I don't see a World Series winning team having Teoscar Hernandez in right field for them. I just don't see it.
I will say to that, it makes it better to have Kwan in left field. Like, it would be such an upgrade in left field that it does make the defense better. But you're right. It means that Mookie has to stay at short. It means he has to stay at short or move to second, and then Edmund plays short. And then, you know, Hyesung Kim comes in as like a bench piece, you know.
Yeah.
And that could work too. You know, that,
yeah, it could, and it's assuming that Mookie's gonna figure it out and be great at short, and then we'll just leave Páez in center, Edmund at second, sub Kim in, and then, you know, Kwan is starting in left field. That's cool, I guess. I just don't see it. So, Jesse, the move that I really want to see the Dodgers make, it would be for an arm, but it would be a bullpen arm. You heard me talk about it before. I'm really in on David Bednar. For this season, he's got a 2.37 ERA with a 1.11 whip, 17 saves. And I just feel like he's a cost-effective piece that we can get cheaper than Pete Fairbanks. I really think that the Rays are going to push for something more. But then again, Pittsburgh could too. But anyways, that's just what I think. I think a little David Bednar, a guy you could put in high leverage situations, a strikeout guy. You know, what is the value of swing and miss in October, dude? Invaluable. And, you know, we've seen it from guys like Brandon Morrow to Caleb Ferguson, you know, guys that have had these moments in the postseason where they're untouchable. And I think a guy like that can be that unexpected bridge, right, that you need. Like, that gets you to, like Banda was last year, right? Just being lights out. You go Banda, Vessia, Trine, and game's over, you know? Like, something like that. That's how I see it, Jess.
So, what would be your thoughts on playing Kwan in center field? I like your Bednar thing. I we've talked about this before, so I'm not going to disagree with you on that. If they go after Bednar, I'm into it. But Kwan could play center field.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your thought on that?
Moving
Páez to right?
I mean, I would love to see Páez in right if that meant Kwan had some sort of quantifiable stats in center. Let me see. I don't know how many games he's played in center field before.
Yeah, I mean, he's primarily a left fielder, but
yeah, if he's got a sizable amount, like, I'm into it. Look, I like Stephen Kwan to begin with. I think he's a scrappy dude, elite, you know, contact ability, and I think he's the straw that stirs the drink, right? I really dig him for that, but I really feel like the price is going to be a little silly because I think teams like maybe, I don't know, like the Blue Jays could overbid for him, you know? They find themselves in a first place division in the AL East where the Yankees are sinking, and I feel like a Kwan could be a huge difference to a Toronto team, whereas he would be like a game to a Dodgers. I don't know. Maybe I'm off base completely. Sound off in the comments. Let me know what you think. But that's just where I see it. I feel like the bullpen needs a little more bolstering, where I think there's enough in-house solutions and reorganization of the outfield that could serve the same purpose as a trade. If you get a few guys playing their true positions. Literally, it would be in this position, three or four guys playing true positions regarding Mookie, Teo, Ha-Sung Kim, or Rojas at short, and Tommy Edman at second. You know, all basically hinging on Muncy coming back healthy and effective soon.
Right, and I think that is obviously a concern. We don't know how Muncy is going to be when he comes back. Just to put a cap on it, Kwan is hitting .287 with a .351 on base, .411 slug, and a .762 OPS. He's got some good numbers, but he doesn't hit the ball very hard. He makes good contact, though. He's like in the 98th percentile of squaring balls up across baseball, and he's like number one. He's like the 100th percentile of whiff percentage. Like, he does not swing and miss. He is a fucking pest. He'd be a great addition to the lineup, to be honest.
Totally.
It's a matter of fit, and yeah.
Jesse, every one of those advanced stats are why I think that the Dodgers will be priced out. That's why.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Okay. So, moving on, what we're going to get into now is our predictions for potential trades. But one last thing to note here is about who may be going out for the Dodgers is Dustin May. There have been reports that he's going to be on the block, that he's probably the biggest in major league trade chip the Dodgers have right now in terms of like impact players that on the major league level the Dodgers could give up to get something in return. Now, whether that be flipping for prospects on our end or trying to get back some major league help in the bullpen or in the outfield, we don't know yet. But Dustin May, rumored to be traded. There was a report from, who was it? Who said that May was taking pictures on the field and that it could be his last start in a Dodger uniform.
That was I actually heard that on Dodger Talk with David Vasse. I forget after which game. It was last weekend series in LA, but Dustin May and his wife were taking pictures after what could have been his last start in LA. The team that drafted him, that he's won a couple World Series with, but never, I think, really reached his full potential. Some really killer highlights, right? Sweepers against Machado, things of that nature. But injury and inconsistent results kind of play
injuries him. Injuries mainly. Yeah, because we're never going to. Yes, there was obviously always inconsistent results, but the injuries, no doubt, two Tommy Johns in 3 years, 4 years.
Just sucks. It just sucks. I feel like he was a young guy that had like a really, I don't want to say unique, because he was kind of this lengthy power arm, I don't know, makeup, you know, that you kind of see for a little
bit. You know what he reminded me of? He reminds me of Logan Webb. But like a harder throwing Logan Webb. And I kind of always saw that as like his ceiling was to be like a Logan Webb, with his pitch type. Like he wasn't going to have a ton of strikeouts, but he was going to pitch to, you know, just overpowering hitters so that they'd get weak contact. And, you know, that was like his ceiling to me. And it's just, he couldn't get there. You know, the bottom fell out because of the Tommy Johnson, but he's okay this year. You know, he's a kind of a 6 innings, 3-run guy. Basically, that's what he's maxing out at.
I would say 6 innings, 4 runs, but
go ahead. You know, the ERA is about like 3.3 per six.
Is it though?
It depends on what we could actually get back for him, but that seems like that's going to be our best trade piece at the major league level. So we'll see what happens there. If that is the last time we ever see him in a Dodger uniform, giving up the home run to Bregman and everything at Fenway, you know, it is what it is. I don't think we were expecting a ton from him this year anyway, but I do think he has
overall,
even though he's been frustrating, I think that he has been good enough to what we needed him to be this year in terms of, like, he's been our best innings eater, dude. Like, probably by a long shot. Like, in terms of guys that are consistently eating innings every day, like, he's been our best innings eater. So,
yeah. Look, the bullpen has been, like, ranked, like, 24th in baseball. Starters not far behind. But, like, when you're struggling like that, any semblance of reliability is so welcome. So Dustin May, in my book, you know, he's a Dodger fucking for life, really. I would stop short of a Dodger like legend, but no. he's a Dodger for life. And I got nothing but love for D-May. There are rumors of the Yankees being interested in him, but I wouldn't be surprised to see like a D-May and a Bobby Miller for some young prospects that we'll never see and some cash considerations.
Whatever happens with Dustin, we wish him nothing but the best, but we do have a trade deadline coming up in the next 48 hours. So I guess let's just go over our picks for who we think will get moved or who we think would be our biggest blockbusters, like our biggest like game changing trade.
Needle movers.
Yeah. Needle movers here at the deadline. Going forward, and what team you think that they could go to, what player you think are going to get moved. Let's start with you, Brandon. Who do you got?
Jess, you know, I've been pounding this drum for a couple weeks now, but the trade that makes the most sense to me is Osuna from the Braves becoming Osuna from the Padres. It just makes too much sense, too much swag. I feel like the Padres offense has been kind of stammering all year. So you get a little protection for Machado in there. Now you have a big three of, you know, with Arraez, you know, leading off, but Tatis, Machado, and Ozuna, like that's a formidable head of your Hydra, you know. It makes sense to me, and I think that's what they should go for. There's a lot of talk about the Padres moving on from C, so I don't know. Jess, what do you think?
So would Ozuna play outfield? Because I'm pretty sure he's DHing, and I think the Padres do need a left fielder. So, I mean, they might need him to play some left field, which would be very interesting.
I think they'll take those home runs, but that left field is god-awful. I don't know who they got at DH right now. I think it's like Cronenworth, maybe? So I figure you can find some flexibility.
Is Arraez DHing?
He might be.
I want to see, actually, who's DHing for the Padres?
Yeah, that's interesting. Question. I don't know.
I guess I should look
that up before I took my take.
Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I want to see who's DHing for them because that's super interesting. Let's see, box score. Who's DHing for the Padres? It's Gavin Sheets is doing a lot of DHing. And
who?
Ben Johnson, Bryce Johnson has been playing left field. Yeah, I like it. Maybe they just play Ben Sheets in left field. Or maybe they'll figure that out. But I kind of like, I also just think that Ozuna makes too much sense as an Atlanta Brave. I mean, as a San Diego Padre.
Right? Thank just, you, dude.
Like, just personality-wise, mm-hmm. you know, character-wise, I have a feeling he's going to fit right in with that clubhouse. Dylan Cease, you mentioned it, it does seem like that the Padres are going to have to get something for him, unless they really believe they can win it all with Dylan Cease this year. But I think there are obviously a couple of contenders out there. The one that terrifies me the most is Dylan Cease to the Houston Astros. And the more I thought I looked into that, the more sense it made.
Yeah.
And I think that that would be just horrifying proposition for them to pick this up, because they've been doing this. They've maintained that division, taken over that division, totally injured. They don't have, like, Yordan Alvarez. They haven't had him since early May. So they're just somehow doing this, and they don't have – I mean, other than Framber Valdez, they just don't have a very formidable rotation, and I think that Dylan Cease would make a lot of sense for them to go after. If not the Astros, then perhaps the New York Mets would go out and make that move.
So, I love both of those, to be honest with you. Those both make a lot of sense to me. Who else we got, Jess? Dude,
we talked about Kwan to the Dodgers. We can skip that one.
Yeah. One that I really, really like, and I think, you know, we're talking about needle moving trades, right? Like, what takes a team from a contender to a favorite? The Chicago Cubs, a team that I've been talking about is very dangerous all season. Going after the Washington Nationals' Mackenzie Gore. You'll remember he was a part of the Juan Soto trade from the Padres a couple years ago. Made his first All-Star team this year. Just a killer. You put that at the top of that pitching staff, or that rotation. I mean, really, really, I think you have a World Series top three right there.
Yeah, and, you know, it'd be interesting to see what they'd get back for that, because that trade, I have to give the Nationals all the credit in the world for how they made out like bandits in that trade to get James Wood, to get CJ Abrams and Mackenzie Gore. I mean, they really stocked up potential future. So if they do trade him, I would expect them to probably only do it if they get a haul, if they get a really nice prospect package in return. But I do think that the Cubs need to make a move, particularly on the pitching end, to really flesh out that team and realize their potential, because they were in first place for a while, but those Milwaukee Brewers, man, have just kind of taken over. And, you know, I think that the Cubs have kind of started to show their true colors a little bit. So they're going to need to make a move to keep up with the Brewers, because I think the Brewers are just a better organization at this point.
And remember, Kyle Tucker, free agent after this season. So.
Exactly. You got to capitalize on this time now. This is it. This is your window. Yeah. So I agree with you there. You know, the Diamondbacks are probably the most interesting team to watch here, because they were, you know, potential World Series pick before the season started. That ain't happening anymore.
Nope.
And they've already traded Josh Naylor. And now we're hearing reports that basically everybody is on the table. Zach Gallen is going to get traded. So is Merrill Kelly, most likely. I believe Gallen's in a contract year, so he is, you know, he will be a free agent at the end of the season. Zach Gallen or Sandy Alcantara will be going to the New York Yankees, I think. Ooh. is my pick, because the Yankees just aren't they don't have the balls to make the big trades anymore. They're gonna make the smaller trades. So they won't go after Cease, but they will go after Gallen. And I could see Zach Gallen going to the New York Yankees, especially with Gerrit Cole out. He's a stopgap to fill in until Gerrit Cole comes back next season.
Yeah, and, you know, his cost is going to be a little bit down, you know, having a tough year. So I do like that. I think that makes a lot of sense for the new-look Yankees, if you will. Definitely not, you know, the evil empire anymore, but still formidable in their own right.
One more I have before I want you to have the last say here on the on our wild card pick. I do think that we have to watch the Phillies.
I like this one,
because I think that they've seen this Alec Bohm experiment all the way through at this point. I think that they need to fill out that lineup to make it as formidable as possible. While they have Wheeler, while they have this pitching staff that they have, they need to flesh out this lineup if they're going to beat the Dodgers. And I just don't think Alec Bohm puts any fear into anybody at this point, right? I think that the Phillies are going to make a move for Eugenio Suarez or Nolan Arenado if they can't get that deal done. But I could see Alec Bohm getting sent out of town, and Suarez or Arenado will be joining the Phillies at the deadline.
Totally. I love that. I think Suarez is the needle mover. I don't know about Arenado. I think he's a upgrade regardless, but I think the cost might be a little bit comparable. I think if you're going just off talent, I think Suarez is the guy that can win the Phillies a World Series. I think he is that kind of difference maker.
He's been, in terms of like hitting home runs, I think he is prolific. Prolific. Judge and Ohtani.
Yes.
Hitting as over the past 162 games, he's hit like almost 60 home runs.
Yeah. He's a beast.
Yeah.
I love that pick. I think that's a great call. And Jess, I'm going to just toss out my last pick because when I brought this up originally, you thought I was crazy. Some of our listeners thought I was just a fool, didn't know ball. Ketel Marte of your Arizona Diamondbacks is the only way that this team can be competitive again. And hear me out. Mm-hmm. It's not with his bat. It's not with his fielding, but he is the only way that Arizona will be able to receive top-tier pitching, which they are losing in free agency with Merrill Kelly and Zach Gallen, and with the injury of Corbin Burnes, their latest, high-profile pitching failure. No disrespect to Jordan Montgomery or, Mad Bum before him.
I give some disrespect to Mad Bum. I'll disrespect
Get it out of the fucking ocean. Anyways, but my point is, Jess, the Diamondbacks know better than anybody that a couple of frontline aces can take you all the way to the World Series. And without the three aforementioned starters, who do they got? Brandon Pfaadt? That's it.
Yeah.
So the Diamondbacks, I think, are, in a world of thirst looking for a little quencher. And I think that can come from the trade of a Ketel Marte. Mets make a lot of sense to me, dude. They can absorb that contract. They can give them basically whoever you want from our system, whatever pro talent you need in the interim. They'd be willing to eat cash, dude. What do you think? Am I out of control? What do you think?
Well, it makes sense that the Mets would do it because they are looking to build around Soto during this giant Soto contract. They're obviously willing to spend money. Marte signed a six-year, $116 million contract with a player option in 2031. So you're going to have control for like the next 5-6 years, basically. Makes a lot of sense to go to the Mets. I think they'd gladly move off of Jeff McNeil, maybe move him into like left field or something if they could get
even have him as a bench piece.
Yeah. Another option, and I know that they have who's the Red Sox second baseman prospect? Hold on a second. Red Sox second baseman prospect. I'm giving it away right now. God, who is the guy that just got sent down? And I'm blanking on him. Whatever. I think that the Red Sox could potentially be a fit for Ketel Marte too. And I don't think it'll happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did it. They don't have a second baseman right now. And I see that as a possibility, but I do like the Mets. I think he makes a lot of sense in New York. I think he makes a lot of sense to play alongside Soto and Lindor.
Yeah,
I think that's just an incredible 1-4. So you've had Lindor, Soto, Marte, and Alonso. That's disgusting.
That wins the World Series, right?
Yeah, I think that'd be good enough. I think that's good enough right there.
I agree. Like we were talking about the whole point of this exercise are moves that could make a team from a contender to a champion. And I think Ketel Marte in pinstripes can win the Mets a World Series.
Mets pinstripes, baby blue pinstripes.
You know, they're a type of pinstripe.
Right. I think so. I don't think it's going to happen, but I do think that that needle is getting closer and closer to possibly happening. And if we hear his name, we might start hearing some buzz about Ketel Marte in the next couple of days. And it would take a fucking haul. Like, it might take a third team to get involved for some prospect flipping that the Mets would have to do some dancing. I don't know what their farm system is
like. Hear me out. I don't feel like their farm system is super deep, especially in pitching, because we would have seen more young talent be brought up. But what I do think that Uncle Stevie can do is he could eat half of that contract right away. Just like, how about I just fucking take this much cash? We'll give you these guys. Give him Acuna. Give him a couple of top pitching prospects. Some, you know, maybe a Jeff McNeil. You throw him in there so they got a second baseman to play. And you eat McNeil's salary too. And you just go, all right. Fuck it. I think the Diamondbacks take that, dude. They have a very cash considerate owner.
You might be right. They definitely are cash considerate. There's no question about that. They have been they have notoriously cheap, which is why it was surprising they spent so much money. But I just think that fit makes too much sense in New York. I love it, Brandon.
I knew I'd win you over, dude.
You know, the Mets should probably do it soon for specific reasons, because there might not be this endless supply of money that they can spend forever. Oh. We might be seeing a salary cap coming around, and we're going to have to wrap this up pretty quickly here, but there is some talk with a potential labor dispute happening in the next couple of years, that we're going to see a new CBA, and that we might be seeing some talks of a salary cap, and made evident by Rob Manfred visiting the Philadelphia Phillies facilities the other day.
Yeah, dude.
Where he had a little bit of an altercation with Bryce Harper, who took umbrage with the fact that Manfred was there to sort of talk with the players about the potential for a salary cap in the coming seasons, to which Harper so eloquently and colorfully responded that he could get the fuck out of here if he wants to talk about a salary cap. And, you know, one of the biggest voices for the players, a guy that's already gotten his bag. He got his 13-year deal. He got a huge contract, biggest in the history of the Phillies. And, you know, so it is saying a lot. But, do we think that this is what's the there? What's the takeaway from this little altercation with Harper and Manfred?
I think if there's anybody in the league that understands professional gamesmanship, it's Bryce Harper. It's a guy that's been scouted since he was a teenager, before he could, you know, vote, before he could drink, before, you know, whatever. He was being, you know, dissected and under the microscope of MLB scouts and evaluators and teams telling you that he's overrated or underrated in whichever way, right? All of that to say that your rating is how you're paid, right? So I think Bryce has had maybe more firsthand experience of the manipulation that media and metrics can have on a player. Now, adding in the financial uncertainty of, you know, a lockout, and is there going to be a salary cap or a salary floor? I think we're reminded of a reporter, Pablo Torres, that broke a story about the NFL and their owners' collusion to keep players paid down. Famously with the Deshaun Jackson, Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson, Watson. Yeah.
But with their contracts, there was some verbiage about discipline, spending discipline. I forget exactly what the quote was, but basically about not overpaying for veteran contracts. There has been a lot of talk about that in the last few years. In the last few off seasons, we've heard players from Kike Hernandez on down, we're talking about getting the same offer from multiple teams at the same time and them expiring exactly at the same time. So the reason why I brought up Pablo Torre, the journalist who exposed this, was that it was agreed to be kept under wraps by the NFL Players Union head, as well as the owners. So my point is Bryce Harper knows that things can get manipulated, get real dirty, and get real nasty. And anybody that's against the players union, literally negotiating on behalf of the people trying to keep money out of these players' pockets, has no business maybe picking a younger player who doesn't know any better and maybe pressuring him to feel a certain type of way about negotiations. You do that through enough of the league and, you know, maybe younger players aren't feeling the same way as their veteran counterparts. And you have some disagreements in a union that's supposed to be, you know, pushing in the same direction. So Jess, my take is that Bryce Hero is a union and labor populist hero, dude, doing it all for the little guy. We aren't too far removed from major league ball players living in the slums of Brooklyn, you know, being trolley dodgers and walking down past the local butcher shop to go play ball. But Jess,
yeah,
I don't know. I think it's cool. Who doesn't want to tell their boss to fuck off?
I mean, look, that's when you know you've made your money, is when you can do that. You're untouchable at this point. He knows that he's untouchable, but it speaks more so to me just about the lack of trust between the players' union and the ownership, and what that there's just such that the players clearly feel like the owners are operating in bad faith with in terms of how they negotiate with the players. And
Jesse, to your point real quick, I'm sorry to interject, but there was a work stoppage from concession workers at Fenway during the Dodgers series, literally over just fair pay. You know, it's people are getting squeezed everywhere and it's tough to, you know.
So clearly, like, that's what this is that Harper recognizes that once this happens, that once the salary cap is implemented, there will not be another Bryce Harper contract. That future superstars will not get the benefit of this sort of financials. Not that there won't be financial security. They're still going to get paid a lot of money, but that there won't be the length of contract that certain teams won't be able to shell out more than others. And this clearly to be honest, it feels like a reaction to the Dodgers and their ability to spend money in a way that other teams can't, and that we're going to implement a contract limitation simply because we didn't run our business well enough to compete with the Dodgers, and that we're not in a market that can compete with them. And it's all from the veneer of, like, we're going to level the playing field. But in reality, like, if you look at the NBA, if you look at other sports, like, the Lakers are in the playoffs every year. I know the OKC just won it. I know that they just beat Indiana, but that's like that's a one-off. Like, Miami makes the finals. The Knicks were in the conference finals. The Lakers were in the playoffs. You know, the big teams always seem to make it. The big city teams always still seem to find a way, because that's where players want to go. Mm-hmm. It's not just about salary cap. It's about where the best players want to go. They want to go to the biggest cities with the best weather, with the best market, with the best chance of becoming the biggest possible brand that they can be. And that has nothing to do with the salary cap. That has everything to do with opportunity, capitalism, free market, all that shit. Which, you know, hey, the players' union in baseball is one of the strongest unions in the world, and I'll support it until the day I die, because we know, you know as well as I do, that these owners aren't operating in good faith when it comes to, you know, honesty about money that they're spending and how they want to spend it and where they want to spend it and how much they're saving and how they want to charge the fans.
Mm-hmm.
We're the ones that always end up picking the price on it, no matter what, every single time. The taxpayer always comes in and pays the bills. So,
I think you nailed it, right? Like, the Dodgers are kind of being used as like a convenient fool, for lack of a better term, you know, like, hey, look at this guy, they're overspending, you know, how are the Reds supposed to compete? And it's like, well, if you remember, like, Reds ownership, like when they won the World Series, I think in the 70s or 80s, they swept and their owner was so pissed off because she didn't win, you know, or earn more playoff revenue. She right. like, didn't throw a parade or anything like that.
Harper, though, remember, he was actually also like defending the Dodgers earlier in the season. He was saying, I think it's great what they're doing, how they're spending money and how they're, you know, they're going out there and rewarding the players. So,
yeah, he said it was loser talk to complain about the Dodgers spending money. And I'm right there with him. I think, look, I don't think every team needs to spend $300-something million, but I think that there was some, I know I'm just kind of spitballing, but I think there was a little study or something. I was like, oh, you, like, to be competitive, you need to spend around like $185 million, $200 million, which is well below the luxury tax. Yeah. But teams still don't do it. And you're a fool if you don't think these owners are making at least that through revenue sharing and things of that nature.
Let's put it this way. If you're pro salary cap and you're essentially what you're saying is like, it's another way of saying you're anti-worker. You're pro billionaire. You know, like you want the billionaires to get the better end of this deal. That's basically
you're literally saying yeah. I don't want there to be any limit to how much money the league can make, but this is how much I think a player should.
Yeah. And I don't think like, there should be a limit to what workers can earn.
You know, totally. And we haven't even talked about
are the workers. You know, that's what they are.
Haven't even talked about how this would affect players like free agency. They wouldn't be able to be stuck in a, you know, like Paul Skeens would be a free agent like next year, I believe. Yeah. You know? So it's not like these small market teams that would potentially develop a Paul Skeens would get to keep them because they would become free agents sooner. And it just would be, hey, they're gonna make more sooner, but less overall. And I don't know. I'm not for it. I think the mega contracts like Machado's and Harper's and Otani's and Soto's and Betts are few and far between, and they're very, very well earned. But yeah, dude, that's just me. I'm a populist fella, always rooting for the worker.
I couldn't have said it better myself. So we'll wrap there. We'll see what happens. Not looking forward to 2026. When we start having potential work stoppage, so we'll see what happens. But that's where it seems like this is all headed. But this was a fun one. This was our trade deadline special. Let us know in the comments what moves you think teams are going to make, what moves you think the Dodgers should make. If you agree with us, if you disagree with us, let us know. And Brandon, this was a fun one, buddy. I will I'll either see you this weekend or next week. But you know, don't be a stranger.
Hey, dude, you know I'm just putting in that OT time.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But Jess,
don't disconnect again.
Don't tell me what to do. Yeah. Jess, it is always a pleasure. You know I love getting a dog ball with you. I miss you. I love you. And you're my guy, dude.
Love you, too. Love all of the supporters out there. Keep on supporting, and we'll see you next time.